and take apologies that were received by the, through the Secretariat and that you members have from your colleagues. Can you take that, Chair?
Sorry, Chair, before we accept the agenda, apologies. I would item to the agenda, and that is the how we're going to deal with the hundreds of thousands of submissions that have been received. I don't think, oh, can we speak broadly, because I see there's only one item, and that is the logistical arrangements of the meetings, but there are obviously other issues as well, and I don't want to be constrained from raising them because it's not on the agenda. Maybe your guidance.
No, let me give you some guidance, because I know Honorable Carter is going to say the same thing. Whilst we put a generic heading, but what we're going to deal with under the agenda is the program, is the security arrangements, it's the venue and the actual event that's going to happen there, it's the logistical arrangements, in other words, the traveling and so on, and it's the written submissions. So we're covering everything, although the heading is there. Once we've given the presentation, members then can add whatever else you think there's gaps, because it's our meeting. It's really an open meeting. But it takes care of all those issues.
Yeah. Are you covered, Honourable Swartz?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, let's then receive the apologies.
Thanks, Chair. Those that we've received so far, Honourable Matapos on sick leave, as is Mulchecha on sick leave. Mpumluana is not here. Lotring and Gornov are on study tours with science and technology. Matlachupen is attending political business in the northwest, and then Nwabe and Babama and Filtane is on a rural development. Mampuru and Motara are on other business here within the NCOP. Those are the apologies that we've received, Chair. And then Honourable Floyd wants to say something.
Honourable Chivambo?
No, the apologies from the EFF is the Commander-in-Chief is doing organizational work, and the NCOP, the Wamukwele, is in the NCOP business.
Can we note all of them, Honourable Member? All right. They're all noted. As we said, Honourable Members, we've set out the purpose of this meeting really to do the briefing by way of update in terms of where we are with all the arrangements in all areas, and then to make sure that members are on board and that the community the members of the public are also well informed on what then is the final take or process going forward, what's taking place, what will not take place, and what is expected to happen during this entire process. Co-chairperson Honorable Smith will lead the briefing. And I'm handing over to you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Members, you should have this file here. I think it's been distributed now. We should have the program and then the travel logistics, so we'll refer to it when it needs arises. But the first one is the program. Just to indicate to members that the program that you have here is the final program. We've been receiving correspondence to the effect that the program continues to change and is confusing. There's no confusion in the program. This program was distributed some time ago, also to all the relevant stakeholders in government and to the provinces. That's the final program. It has the times. We have 11 to 4 o'clock in most instances, but it doesn't mean we'll go to 4. If we finish before 4, that's fine, but it's 11 to 4. So I just want to indicate that the program before you is the final program. There were maybe one or two changes in terms of Hroblersdal and Tzaneen, and that was purely on the basis of the 150 logistics and advice that we received from the provinces. So, yes, let's discuss the program. Then we'll move on to the next issues. Honourable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've seen some correspondence to the secretary about the move from Marble Hall or to Marble Hall from Frobisher. The information that we have is that the venue in Marble Hall is totally insufficient and will never be able to accommodate the people who are interested in coming. So is there a reason why we're having it in Marble Hall as opposed to Frobisher, even if we know that it's not going to be big enough?
Is there anything else on the program? Just on the venues we're talking about. Somebody will answer why you've decided to go to Marble Hall. Honorable Swartz.
Not on the times yet. Are you talking about the times and venue? No, Chair, one of the earlier programs indicated that there'd be a meeting of stakeholders early in the morning, and then there'd be at each venue. If I understand correctly, it was a draft. Is that still proposed? That there'd be, and you're going to give guidance as to which groups or people are going to be invited to make submissions. Are we going to meet? Because that then will affect the time of, I see it starts at 11 o'clock. If there's going to be a meeting before that for a discussion as to who's going to be making submissions, surely that would be reflected in the time as well. Thank you, Chair.
Anything else on the program, Honourable Cuff?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, just from what Honourable said right now, is, you know, if we look at the time allocated, I think it's also important that we know. It's also important that we know how much time are we going to allocate to each person. Say, for example, there's 300 people there that wants to make submissions or do presentations. How are we going to deal with it? What is the time? Because only then will we know. You know, what the time period should really be. Should we finish at 4, will we be finishing at 6 o'clock, for example? Thank you.
No, we did indicate that when we get to the events, we'll discuss it there. We're just talking about the venues now. All those other things we certainly would cover. Around the venues, why did we move from Frobisher to Marble Hall? And just to deal with the second one, Honourable Swartz, 11 o'clock till 4 o'clock, and it could be till 12 o'clock at night or whatever the case might be, is for everybody. There's no special dispensation for somebody to present. It's a public meeting, whether you organize this, and we'll come to it when we discuss it, but there's going to be no separate meeting for organized people and something like that. We'll deal with it when we talk about the venue, just to answer that one. Why did we move from Frobisher to Marble Hall? Can somebody explain? Organizers. The question is that Marble Hall is not adequate for the numbers of people that are going to attend, according to Honorable Breitenbach. Can somebody explain to us? If you don't have an explanation, then we'd have to make a plan on our feet here. But what was the rationale? Can somebody explain?
Chair, the rationale was that the hall in Frobisher didn't have a capacity. The one in Marble Hall could accommodate the number of people that are expected to attend the hearing.
Honourable Breitenbach seems to be suggesting differently.
Mr. Chair, the information I have from our provincial chairperson in that area is that the Frobisher venue is much bigger than the one in Marble Hall, and the one in Marble Hall will never accommodate the people that he knows are interested, let alone those he doesn't even know about.
Well, Shivambo, help us out, Bob.
Chair, I propose that we stick with Marble Hall, and if these excess attendance will provide for facilities to deal with that. I think that is the communication that should be sent, that if the hall is not adequate, there must be other interventions to deal with that. So Marble Hall should remain.
All right. We did inspect the venue, but we want you guys to at least satisfy us that there's a plan B in the event that there's an overflow, because that seems to be the suggestion, in Marble Hall specifically. Honourable Carter.
Chair, well, originally it was going to be Frobisher until last week. So where the decision was taken, because it wasn't really taken in a meeting, I therefore propose that before we decide that it's going to be now in Marble Hall, let's have a look and come back to us before the end of this meeting so that we can, because originally it was going to be Frobisher until last week Friday. Thank you.
No, Bakata, don't complicate our life. You'll recall that we said those are the venues, but we've left it up to members to go and look at it, taking the principles into account. And that's what we did, because there was a similar type of thing in the Eastern Cape, where we took a decision on one way, but after discussions we took, I think it was East London, and we went somewhere else or vice versa. I think Honorable Floyd's suggestion is the more appropriate one. Let's go and have a look at it. If, let's put it differently, we don't want a situation where people are denied access or denied the opportunity to say their say because your venue was inappropriate. Is that okay? You guys will make that happen. Come back to us. We will make sure that on the 27th it happens. Honorable Carter, we don't have time. Unfortunately, this is our last meeting. We go into the field on Friday. And if needs be, they will come to me and I will talk to you directly if you want us to talk to you after they've come to us. But I don't think we can afford to have a meeting.
Chair, I think you misunderstood me. I made it, I think it was pretty simple. All I'm saying is that today still we can just have a clarification which hall is bigger before maybe even this meeting is finished. We can have that answer.
No, I'm saying to you that Honorable Floyd has come with a proposal. And if that proposal is unworkable, we'll come back to you, taking into consideration that we don't want people to be denied access. That's the decision that we've taken, that we will make sure that everybody has access to the. Anything else around venues itself, Marble Hall, stroke, Krobler, we will finalize before we leave today. Anything else around just the venues, we're talking about venues. None? Thank you so much. Can we then get a briefing on the security arrangement, both for members and for the public and for every, Honorable Floyd?
I don't know where the wisdom of having to discuss security arrangements in an open meeting. I don't know where the wisdom of discussing security arrangements come from in an open meeting like that. I think that those who are going, they must be briefed on a separate platform. I mean, why would you want to talk about security arrangements in an open meeting like this? So if people wanted to ambush you, then you are just giving them the whole plan, that this is how we're going to move, this is the security detail that we have and everything else there. It's not wise at all to just expose the security plan. Let's commit that we're going to be there, all members of parliament who are going to visit, and secure, will be safe, all of us, in terms of what is required. But to then come and outline the entire detail, it's honestly not wise.
No, thank you. They were not going to outline, but I take your point. Let's just give you the assurance that the security cluster is working on the ground together with our security detail in Parliament, that everything that needs to be done around the security is being handled. The normal security, metal detectors and those type of things. So MPs will be safe. Both from operatives on the ground and our detail. Yeah, maybe we should leave it at that. They have given us a briefing. They have also assured us that on a daily basis that they will brief us about developments for the next day so that we can alert you if there's a need to alert you for the next day. But we'll have our own, as Honorable Floyd is saying, closed-door meetings if the need arises. But they have assured us. But if there's any general questions, they're here to answer them, if there are general questions. I don't think they should get into the detail. Honourable Carter and then Honourable Swartz.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for that. But just, I think what is important, the servants of the people, you know, our security might be important, but I think that those of the public are even more important. And we're not asking you to discuss what security is in place, but just to make sure that that is a fear that is out in the field, what is going to happen, is there security at these venues? And I'm not talking about members of parliament, I'm talking about the public. If we can just have a security that listen, there is going to be sufficient security to deal with any possible situation that we can have. Thank you.
No, Chair, it's along the similar lines that we are fully aware that this is a very emotive issue. And when we are having public hearings, we need to have the assurance that every person will be given the opportunity to express their views and will not be intimidated in any way. And that's a security issue. So we need to ensure that security is also, from the public's perspective, that every person that comes to make a submission will be able to make that submission without any interference. I think that's very important. Thank you, Chair.
Right. Let's ask you to give a very high-level one, and then hopefully that will cover the concerns that members have raised. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chair, and members of Parliament. My name is Eugene Stevens. I'm from the Parliamentary Protection Services.
Just to start by a few speaking notes that I've put out for myself, and it's clear, says director, it's very high level. It's basically confirming that the protection services with the team went to inspect all the venues that was identified. We were given a directive of 350 people. That was the minimum required per hall, and we have worked along those lines. We were able to meet with the security structures in all the provinces to give us the necessary support. Our health and safety team was also with us in respect of the inspections that was conducted. So from security, there's a specific line that we tell what is the basic requirements of all, and also from a health and safety perspective. So the health and safety was part of our group. Again, there was a 350 minimum requirement that was specified to us that we also accommodate for, and that is the groups that we take parliament will be mobilizing and transporting these people into the venue. At most of our venues, and not all of our venues, we do have provision for overflow. And in terms of sound, as we indicated, I think the briefing will be later on about sound, but sound will be carried within the hall and also then to the overflow venue that is available, whilst they might not be able necessarily to partake in the process as it happens in the hall. But the sound will be carried to those groupings. From our side, in terms of accommodating the public and the media, we've actually created the hall in basically three phases from a security perspective. One will be for members of parliament, the second part will be for the public that parliament has invited, first and foremost, the 350 people that parliament mobilized to attend these venues. And then we do make provision in most of our halls, again, for overflow within the hall and then also for overflow venues where there is available. In order to have a conducive environment and to stick with the rules of parliament, this is a parliamentary committee that will be going out, protection services will have deployment to ensure the basic rules is applied. SEPS will support us in terms of X-ray machines and metal detectors to ensure that people that's coming into the hall will be safe and secure in that environment. And there will be an after deployment, as we said, necessarily looking after the public also. We will register, there will be a registration process, electronic registration process, where we will capture the people that's coming in to have a clear record of everybody that's present, and that includes the media. And at this point, we're asking that members of parliament and support staff from parliament carry their access cards as means of identification once they enter that areas. For the media, we ask we will identify the media, also we will take a special accreditation tag for them along. They must just bring their credentials along to ensure that we can clarify that it's media, and we will try our best within the hall to identify area where the media can operate from. And that chair at the high level, I think we've indicated that a specific briefing will be provided to the chairpersons as we come per town in terms of the details that's relevant to the members of parliament. Thank you very much.
Happiness around security? Yeah, I will have a daily briefing anyway, so if needs arise, we will have those briefings. So we can tick the box around security. Yes? Thank you very much. Can we go to the event itself proper? And I want to keep the high level slight. I said we're starting at 4 o'clock, I mean at 11 and we'll finish at 4, but that's flexible. That's flexible. It depends on how many people are there. The important thing is we've taken a decision and we're making this proposal that because we've not provided catering for community, that MPs themselves will also not be given lunch. There's not going to be lunch for us. So if you're diabetic or you get hungry quickly at the breakfast table, you'll take an extra apple or an extra orange with you. But we're not providing lunch at the venue. There'll be water as a minimum for everybody. That's the first important one. We will have in the meeting, for want of a better word, minute takers. There will not be electronic record-keeping transcriptions as we normally have here, but they will have minute takers or note takers. There will be translation services in all the venues. Make sure that we have the translation services for the dominant languages in that particular venue. As was said earlier on, there will be sound, no vision, but there certainly will be sound. We're making another proposal that we are not going to accept written proposals in the meeting. Written proposals, time has come and gone. But of course, if Carter speaks and she's got a 2-page speaking notes, that you can give us to help us for notes. But we're certainly not taking written submissions anymore. So nobody should come there with a written submission and expect us to accept it. So we may be hoping that that is clear, because the time has come and gone. We are proposing, and again it's very flexible, that minimum will allow every speaker 5 to 10 minutes, but of course we'll be flexible, 5 to 10 minutes speaking time, and of course you'll have round two and round three like is normal. The presiding officers will determine that, and if you want to speak 10 times, you could speak 10 times, but at least we should allow people to speak for 10 minutes on their point. We are also suggesting that...
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Just 5 to 10 minutes, and what was that? You were talking in general. Are you suggesting that MPs will engage with the speaker? So it's purely 5 to 10 minutes, but what was round two or three? What did you mean by that? Did they speak again? Surely it's one off. They speak once, 5 to 10 minutes, finish. Thanks.
No. Yes, I'm saying it's 5 to 10 minutes, but I'm saying to you that if, for instance, whoever has spoken and there's more time and somebody wants to elaborate on his point, we will do it. It's a normal meeting procedure that we will have. But we're not going to allow one person to dominate the meeting. That's the point that we're making. We'd allow for as many speakers as possible. And the final point that I wanted to make around this one was that we're going to be very clear that we're sticking to the mandate. You'll recall that we're not going to allow people to come and give us his backlog of restitution that he must take to another platform. We're not going to deny him, but we'll say to him, but that issue that you're talking about is being dealt with by another committee. Our mandate really is, must the constitution change? If so, how? If you don't think the constitution must change, why don't you think so? So if somebody came and said, but my family, for instance, has got a claim next door, that's really not our mandate. We should be able to say, please leave it with us, we will send it to the relevant people. So in other words, we will stick to our mandate as per the February 27th resolution in terms of what we're going to be talking about, so people could prepare accordingly. And I would imagine their submissions are also along those same lines. So it's not going to be a free-for-all. That's what we're trying to say. Let's take Honourable Swartz,
Chair,
and Honourable Carter.
I think this is a very important issue that you might need to make that very clear, because there's a lot of confusion at the moment with the Rural Development and Land Affairs having public hearings at the same time on the Restitution of Land Act, those public hearings that the Constitutional Court required, and that's happening now. So we need to make it very clear what that mandate is, and we need to stick to that. But just so that the public are not confused, because there's two sets of public hearings taking place at the moment, and it does lead to a lot of confusion. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Shivam.
No, Chair, when the high-level panel, which was dealing with legislation, I think since 1994, which was chaired by former President Motlanthe, was doing public hearings, I think the Parliament Communication Services was able to provide some audio-visual capacity there. I think let's check if there is possibility for doing that. Yeah, then the whole thing of live streaming and engagements. Let us have a national discourse on the whole issue, like so that like everyone else gets involved and participate in whatever the platform that could be. If we could dedicate such a resource for a high-level panel which is not members of parliament, why can't we do that for members of parliament on a process that was resolved by the National Assembly and ultimately the National Council of Provinces? I think that let us request those that are responsible for that facility to avail that. They will have to add on it if there's a bit of challenge, but it's one of the essential things that we should include so that we have a national discourse. There's of course a lot of excitement around it. Let South Africa speak. Let South Africa engage on the question of land, which is important. So we have to deal with that in that particular fashion. I think that let us explore that. But if practically it's not possible, let's proceed with the public hearings. I don't think there's a need for repetition that the issue is about amendment of the constitution and land tenure. Thank you.
All right. Because this is our meeting and not the chair's meeting, can you guys look at the possibility and give us an honest answer about the possibility of visuals at the meeting? If it's totally impossible, convince members why it's impossible now, and let's not raise expectations. But if there's a possibility, then we're asking you to go and explore and let us know, and we will share that information around the visual aspect of it, the sound we are comfortable with. Just to reiterate again for South Africans, when we get to our public hearing, we're going to ask those that stand up to speak to answer the question. Does Section 25 of the Constitution empower the state to expropriate without compensation? If yes, why do you say so? If it is an impediment, why do you say so? Those are going to be the parameters in which people will talk. The whole restitution and so on, as Honorable Floyd is saying. But we're not going into backlogs. We're not going into what is happening with the rural development. Ours is very specific around the Constitution and its amendment or otherwise. Honorable Swart and then Honorable Carter.
I appreciate the sentiment about public involvement in this process, similar to the high-level panel. But one of the constraints is we're sitting in two different groups at the same time. And But what could be done is when we sit here on the Saturday, the 4th of August, that'll be a high level where the two groups come together. And I think that might be an opportunity where that could be broadcast nationally. So that I'm not opposed to it. I'm just saying there is that practical consideration of two groups sitting and having group A and group B, which one do you then broadcast? But I'm not opposed to it, but I'm just saying definitely on that 4th of August when we all sit together at the national, we're sitting in this venue, that could be an opportunity for that as well. Thank you.
Honourable Katsu.
Chair, I'm covered on this exactly the same. Thank you.
All right. So in terms of what we had said, venue/event, we are covered. Okay. Then let's move to what we call logistics. In your pack, I think under 2 and 3 for the two different groups, you will have, I'm just taking group 2, you'll have day 1, which is the 26th will be traveling day. So obviously we leave from home, get to O.R. Tambo. At O.R. Tambo I'll get onto the plane and go to Limpopo. And from there will be the necessary arrangements for me. So that's what it's saying, what time you depart and those type of things. What is important, honorable members, is that from home to your nearest airport, the first one on the 26th, that's for your own account. In other words, from Joburg, Westbury to O.R. Tambo, it's my, like we normally do, from O.R. Tambo you get onto the plane and there'll be arrangements. When we get back to O.R. Tambo at the end of the process, back to Westbury, that's for my account. I use my car as we use. So there won't be a shuttle service taking you there. That's the first one that we wanted to raise with you. The second one that we wanted to raise with you, honorable members, is that, and I'm using group, the inland as an example. We finished Limpopo on the Saturday at Choyando. And then we start on Monday in Mpumalanga. We've tried to look at all scenarios. It's practically impossible to finish Limpopo on Saturday and go back to Johannesburg. I'm using mine as an example. Get on the plane again in Johannesburg and go to Limpopo. So what we are going to do is that on the Saturday, you're going to sleep over in Limpopo. Sunday after breakfast, you'll make your way to Mpumalanga because Mpumalanga is Monday. In other words, the first 2 weeks, there will be no break. You leave on the 26th, and you'll be in the field until the 3rd or the 4th, whatever that date might be. From Toyando to the airport is 2 hours or 3 hours. The last plane from the airport to Johannesburg, I think, is at 3:30. So realistically speaking, it means you must be at the airport at 1 o'clock. Our meeting starts at 11 o'clock. It means there will be no meeting on Saturday. That's what it means for that one specifically. So members must gear themselves up that there is no flight arrangements that are going to be made for you to go home. If you insist on going home, for whatever reason, you'll make your own arrangements. But we're not going to create that because it's not possible. But obviously, if people have their own cars or private jets, you can travel home, but Parliament is not providing that for you. And the same would apply to the group that is doing inland. So the first weekend, you move from Province 1 to Province 2. There's no going home. Then there'll be the break to go home. So I hope members understand that part of it. Of course, there will be the normal shuttle arrangements and so on. And just to indicate, honourable members, Group A, your contact person will be Thuli Twala. Twalo, yes. And Group B, your contact person would be Pat. So in other words, everybody in Group B, please direct whether you need travel, whether there's a strange behavior in your bedroom or in the venue. Don't talk to security directly or to the travel agents. Talk to these people so that they coordinate it for us. They've also asked us to request you to do it timelessly, especially when it comes to traveling, because they need to phone and so on so that they can make the necessary arrangements. But it's Thuli that will accompany Group A, and Pat will accompany Group B as the team leaders together with everybody else that will join them. Okay, and also just to indicate, over and above what I've been reading to you here, you will get an SMS from the travel agents between now and Saturday saying to you, Ms. Carter, you're leaving from Durban, your flight is SA123 and whatever. You'll get the SMS to that effect. So please make sure that you regularly check your SMSs or your emails over and above what's happening. So travel agents should talk to you. If by Saturday nobody has spoken to you, please talk to them and ask them for the necessary arrangements to get to the first venue, which is, in our case, Limpopo and Pietersburg Airport, and in the case Springbok, I think it's the airport or whatever in Springbok, Upington Airport. So please make those arrangements. Are we covered around logistics, honourable members, honourable Swart and then honourable Carter?
Chair, just as far as Group B is concerned, see Monday, the 24th of June, travel from home base to Springbok. Does that mean that the members have to make their own arrangements to get to Springbok, or will there be a shuttle from here or something? That's on the Monday, because I see it's intended to arrive at 12 at Springbok, which is about a 4-5 hour drive from here. And then, Chair, when we stay in Kimberley, do we have to stay at the Groot Hut, or do we have a choice? No, I'm only joking. That's on a lighter note.
Thank you, Chair. The Groot Hut is rarach, it's really not bad.
Not bad.
It's actually quite nice. Yeah. Chair, listen, I think just, you know, we've seen over the last year, and it actually worries me a little bit. I know that we're using shuttle services and we always use it, but the sad reality is if there's one accident, okay, the entire group is out of action, whether it is just a puncture or whatever. Did we, when we looked at the security aspect, really consider, instead of maybe having a combi, of instead having two vehicles so that people travel? I'm just, you know, that we've seen incidents with combis happening in the last year with members of parliament, and that's a little bit of a concern. Then if members are going to use their own transport, is it okay if they just drive together in convoy? One of the things that actually scared me at one of the meetings we attended in Bloemfontein was with the blue light brigades and how an ambulance was actually pushed off the road and those type of things. I don't want to be part of that. So just that type of security when it comes to our transportation. Thank you.
All right, I think the second point is noted, that we can't put 16 MTs in one Kumbi from a logistics and also just from a security point of view. So that we will deal with. I'm hoping you will deal with it. It's not a debate. In terms of Honourable Swartz, you will move from your home base to your nearest airport. From that airport at Kinshasa, you'll then fly to Upington and they will make the arrangements. So you're not expected to make your way to Springbok. To your nearest airport, whether it's O.R. Tambo, Kinshasa, or whichever one, but they will tell you that. So the travel agents will tell you that. And then, of course, where you're going to use your own car, some of us will use our own cars when we're in Gauteng, for instance. I'm sure you can use your car and you'll claim the necessary kilometers for using your own car when you're in Gauteng, in my case, and when you're in KZN for those in KZN, and in Limpopo for those that are in Limpopo. But yes, we're flexible about that. You don't all have to use, as long as you notify us so that we can make the necessary logistical arrangements for your parking and so on as you're using your own car. The normal stuff, this is my car, this is my registration, and so on. And truly, as I said, and Pat are our contact people there. Can we then move away on that one? Anything else around logistics? Happiness, yes, Honorable Kata.
Really sorry, but earlier on you were actually still making your presentation when we were talking about the venue and the logistics, okay, and when Honorable Swartz came up. So there was one point that I left out, and I'm sorry, I don't want to take us back. It is just the process of how are we going to determine who is going to speak and when. Thank you.
I'm sorry. As we said, be flexible from the table. It's a normal public hearing. I think who's going to speak, people in the meeting will raise their hand. Now, there was a suggestion yesterday that said, if we get there and COSATU is there, using it as an example, organized, whatever, we're not going to get 100 COSATU people speaking because there's only one COSATU in Limpopo. So somebody will stand up and say, I'm speaking on behalf of COSATU. Somebody will stand up and say, I'm speaking on behalf of AgriForum. And then Umphakathi will speak. If Floyd wants to speak, he raises his hand. If you want to speak, it's a normal meeting. But there's nobody that's going to get preferential treatment at all, regardless of your station in life in that province. But all we're saying is we can't have 1,000 COSATU people all repeating the same thing, or the 1,000 Agri Forum, or you'll speak on behalf of Agri Forum, or you'll speak on behalf of Deirdre Carter. And like we said, it's 5 to 10 minutes, but everybody will speak. You'll raise your hand and you'll identify and speak. And it'll be chaired from I mean, the presiding officers must use common sense. The intention, as Honorable Floyd said, let South Africans speak, as many of them. The one point that I'd want to raise from our side also, and members can raise it. You know, my own view is that we are going as facilitators. We are not going to push our party line in those meetings. Really, we should be sitting and ensuring that South Africans speak. We will come back and have our own debates when we are here. That's my only appeal. So ours really would be to facilitate. I don't know that there's one chair in my committee or in my group. If there's 10 of us, 10 of us are chairing it. Everybody will make sure that we facilitate it and not us get involved in the banter. So that is my only proposal, that from our side we shouldn't. But our parties, of course, can send delegates who will raise the issues. Honorable Swartz.
Chair, just our engagement, if it's a normal party, if it's a normal parliamentary meeting, one's got limited time, but obviously one needs to be cautious as to what degree we engage as MPs, because you obviously push your party position in that regard, so one needs to also try to guide that process as well. But are you saying that political parties will be making submissions as well at every meeting if they want to? Surely not. Are you going to make a ruling in that regard? I understand that there might be organizations, but we need guidance in that regard as well.
Floyd, help us. You know, we don't want to be hard and fast.
This thing is very simple. We're going to call people in Mahalakwena or in Mebulwon, community members, and as members of parliament, we sit there and say that we are here, we are sent by parliament to come and listen to you. In terms of change of the constitution, I think there's another component of the resolution that speaks to land tenure in terms of how it is. What are your submissions? And then we listen. They were not going to make any inputs. It's not our role. We'll come and speak here ourselves in parliament. There we're just going to listen to people. People stand up and introduce themselves as members of the community, as individuals. Not that I represent COSATU or the ANC or AfroForum. I speak on my behalf that I think this is what should happen. And these are the reasons. So within 2-3 minutes they are done, the next person comes and speaks, and then we then say we take note of all these issues. We understand what is the sentiment of this region that we're having the public hearing at, and then we'll then take note of all those issues when we come back here. to consolidate the perspective. I don't think that we should go and create some stickers there and try to look smarter than the other political parties in front of members of the community. Let's go and listen. That is the intention of the whole process, nothing else.
Honourable Bergman, just on this point.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I think I would differ a bit from Honourable Floyd in the sense that it's a normal parliamentary meeting, so whether it's individual or a person representing a specific organisation or lobby group, that must be allowed. Thank you.
Yeah, no, we will allow that, but I think the point Honourable Floyd is making is that we'll identify people. They will speak, I come from this area, and I'll speak. The point that I think we were trying to make is that we shouldn't engage in politics as the committees. We shouldn't engage. We'll have our time for politics. Ours is purely to facilitate and to co-chair. Honourable Chief.
I think what we really want to emphasize on co-chair and honourable members is that this is not a referendum. Eh? So you whether you bring 10,000 voices, they carry almost the same impact as one voice. So it's not necessary, really. It would be an over exercise to really get one organized grouping to say one thing and mobilizing numbers of people and flood the halls. It's really unnecessary. It's just to have the voice put through and the voice to be taken note of and being part of the whole process when we conclude. I think that's the emphasis we want to put, you know, out there to the public and to honourable members that are part of the committee. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Can we then tick the event? When I say the event, I'm saying that thing. The last thing then is the update on, as Honourable Carter spoke about, the submissions that closed on Friday. What is happening about that one? Can I ask Julie to very briefly tell us how do we see the road forward? Remember, we only start engaging in that exercise from the 7th of August anyway. But between now and the 7th of August, what is happening and so on? Julie.
Thank you, Chairpersons, and members of Parliament as well. I'm just going to give a brief a presentation on what is happening at the moment as far as submissions are concerned. And also to state to members of Parliament in terms of how we are managing that process at this point in time. The first thing to mention is that we have received submissions from the public. At the moment, we are sitting with over a half a million of these public submissions, and we decided that there is a need to get an external service provider to actually capture the information and do other stuff that I'm going to reflect on now. There are three things that we require the external service providers to do. And the first one is response handling. By that, we mean that with everyone that has submitted to Parliament, that they receive either an email or an SMS acknowledging receipt of that of the submission itself, and we also want them to keep proof for us that they have actually done so, so that we are clear that people have actually received the message from Parliament. And the second thing, we want them to index and capture the data or the information that is actually in the submission itself. And we are busy talking with them in terms of the variables that we need to include when they actually look at the information. How we received the submissions, some have sent emails, and some of them have sent this WhatsApp group, sort of, but they are in an email form and also hard copies. But so in that sense, in terms of the variables, some of them have got a mobile number, for example, and we want that information to be captured. And also, if we received an email address is captured as well, because not all of them have got the names of the person, so we can't really say who the person is. And also, we want to know what is each submitter saying about the review or the amendment of the of Section 25 of the Constitution. And also with regards to that, some of the submissions are substantial. What I mean by that is when someone has attached a document with at least 2 to 3 pages, for example, we're going to try and get that information. The actual submission summarized first, and the actual submission attached to next to the name of the person who has actually submitted to the committee as well. And some of the submissions, they came to us as a word or just one line in terms of what the person wants, and that information will be captured as it is. And the committee also requested that they would want people to also make oral submissions, and that people would then indicate in the submissions whether they would like to come for oral submission. And we're asking the service providers as well to give us that information that Mr. So-and-so or Ms. So-and-so has asked to come for oral presentation, so that that information is actually captured as well. And the last thing that we're asking the service providers to do is to analyze the information and produce a report based on the submissions themselves. And and also give, so it means that we will have some quantitative information and qualitative information as well in that report in terms of who are the submitters, but also what are they saying as far as the amendment of the Section 25 of the Constitution. Thank you.
Okay, just to indicate that supply chain management, which is not our business, are busy running with the service providers. I'm informed that that decision to award will be done on Friday, and the work will start on Monday, or as soon as possible. That they have got 30 days to summarize all that information into a spreadsheet of some sort, and that by the time we return on the 6th or 7th of August, we will have that report. Of who is saying what, how many are yes, how many are no, and what's the substance of it. So that work is being done for us. And of course, when we come back, we'll have to decide how we want to process that report that we have. The second thing that we'll have to do, obviously, on the basis of that report, is to identify those that we will call for oral presentation between the 7th and the 17th of August. You'll recall that those are the days we've set aside, from the 7th to the 17th of August, and we'll have to, as a committee, decide of the over 500,000 who we're calling and what basis. But once we've decided that, these good people will then do the program to that effect. So that is what is happening between now and then. And just to indicate that at this point, because it hasn't even happened, we can't say how many said yes or how many said no and so on. But come the report, it'll be very clear. Vincent Smith said yes, Carter said no. So from there we'll be able to give accurate stats. Right now we can only give guesstimates of what is there, but come the 3rd of August we'll be able to say exactly how many yes, how many no's, and the substance of their arguments, whether it's for or against. Is there anything else around the processing of these reports that people want to advise these people, because they're going to be working on it as to go forward? Let's start the side for a change. Honorable Shivambu, then Swartz, and then Carter, around the process of the returns.
No, Chair, I think that if the report which the service provider is going to ultimately produce is going to deal with the quantitative aspect, I think up front we should guide that the submissions that are anonymous, that come from people that cannot say who is this person, must be disregarded. Because one person from AfroForum head office can just sit there and generate SMSs and send 200,000 SMSs and say, no, I object to this process. And then we must then quantify that it cannot be. I think that let's agree in principle that the submissions that do not have identity, and if we even when we try to look for that person, we cannot find, must be disregarded. Let us deal with real human beings, because we might be dealing with computers here, and then we think that there's 500,000 submissions which were submitted by computers. Because there is a deliberate attempt to filibuster the whole process with the intention of frustrating it. We must be aware of that attempt. So I think that part of the critical issues is that if we do not know who submitted, we cannot consider such submissions. Let us take all submissions that came from people who have identified themselves. It's not a secret arrangement which we're dealing with here. Everyone's right is guaranteed. So let us deal with the warm bodies that we can be able to identify. And we know that this is what we're dealing with. Instead of being bogged down by a long process unnecessarily. And of course, if the 500,000 submissions came from 500,000 people, it's okay, let's deal with them. But there's high possibility that these 500,000 submissions that came from a very small number of people, there's just one grouping of people that submitted 200,000 times. So we must be able to detect that, and then we expose it by the time we deal with the final report of the oral the written submissions that have been dealt with. And I think that will become a better way of processing this information, so that we do not fall into the trap of right-wing and reactionary forces that was to defeat the land question.
All right, let's allow everybody to have their say on this matter. So we'll follow Reisenbach, and Swan, and we'll go that way, and we'll finish with you. We'll finish with you, Chair, if you want to make a comment around the process, so that we guide them in terms of what product we want to see. Honourable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The hundreds of thousands of submissions, are we ever going to see them, the actual submissions, and if so, in what format? I don't look forward to carrying them around under my arm, but they need to be accessible.
Chair, I understand that every submission should be linked to a name, but if you've got an email address, it should be sufficient. And I also object to assertions of right-wing people trying to block the process. Every person has got, and as I've said this before in this meeting, every person has got the entitlement to make a submission. And if it is linked to a name or an email address, that submission must be considered by this committee. As your co-chair has indicated, this is not a referendum. So it doesn't matter about the numbers. It's about the quality of the submissions. And so each submission must be given its proper weight. So that's why I agree with Advocate Breitenbach that whilst I appreciate the size, the number, 500,000, we can't or necessarily read them all, but we're going to have to find a way of accessing them. And I agree with that process, a report. But obviously, we as MPs might want to go to the original document. So here's an interesting one. I want to see that to comply with our constitutional requirement to consider every submission. And then, Chair, we will have to sit, because our previous schedule said this past 7th to the 14th of July would be the decision as to which we're going to make oral submissions. Now, obviously, that's fallen by the wayside. So I'm in agreement with your suggestion that from the when we get back 6th, 7th of August, we will have to sit as a committee to decide which of those, based on the reports and other information, we then invite for oral hearings. So I'm basically covered. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I think just firstly, we said that submissions could be done in a specific way. It could have been by email or by delivery. So I agree, if you've received the SMS on a phone on a number that wasn't there, then it shouldn't be accepted. I don't know. We keep on hearing about these WhatsApps. Now, WhatsApp goes to a phone. So, I mean, if the process wasn't followed, then it shouldn't be done. But then something else is, every computer has got a IP address. And in the 224,000 submissions that we did, every single one had an IP address from which computer it was sent. And the reason I'm just bringing this up to you right now is for not duplicating work. Although, you know, like organizations that did submit bigger quantities or amounts, has already been indexed with what did the people say, yes or no, okay, and what was their actual submission. So if a committee agrees, then we can say, listen, let's make that available. It's 14,000 pages of summary compared to 220,000 pages. So that can be made available. Just on having copies available, I don't think until you've actually offloaded it yourself off the back of a truck, you will know what 200,000 submissions look like. It's 1.5 tons of paper. Okay, so if we times that by 3, we're talking about 3.5, 4 tons of paper that if every committee member, it would actually be an impossibility even to have it in one room to go through it. Chair, then I think just something that I want to just warn, and this is something that we've picked up, although you would say I am in support of changing the constitution, but when you go to the content, okay, they actually say something totally different. Well, they might say, no, we don't support the change of Section 25, but if you look at the content, it's a different story. So whoever is going to be analyzing this cannot just go, they will have to be very careful, especially with the submissions that I know that we wanted a clear answer, do you support or don't you support, but their recommendations in the actual body didn't always say exactly that. So I think it's important that a person just need to look at that as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think I'll align myself with my colleagues who have put their point in terms of making sure that those that are submitting, they must be identifiable, because I see no point why a person should hide himself, but also to pay attention to some instances where you receive more than one submission, say from one computer, if I may say so, because people are staying in rural areas where they use service providers in town, and they go to an internet cafe and then they will submit. But I think what will help the committee, the organic committee, would be the content of the submission to detect whether it's actually one person that is trying to submit as many as possible, or it's different groups but using the same service provider, say in town. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I think from our side we must be inclusive. All voices must be heard, but of course precedent must be followed as well. It must be linked to a specific address, and there must be, the individual must be identified, and I think the proposal made by Dr. Thule is fine.
All right. Happy with the preliminary processes around submissions. Is there any other business that we've not covered in terms of our process going forward that members want clarity on? Safe to say you're all aware that we've now got an extension from the 31st of August to the 28th of September. That extension, I assume, was made known, so I think that's where we're working from. But everything else, I am hoping we've covered. And of course, as we go along, we're very flexible. People will come with suggestions this evening. We'll cuddle together, decide how we handle tomorrow. But this is a broad framework so the South Africans know more or less what to expect and when to expect it and how to expect it. Can I allow then for anybody that wants to add to, subtract from, enhance the process to speak? Honorable Shivambu, Honorable Carter, everybody, all right. Let's start at the back this time. Bob, if there's anything you want to add, and we'll end up with you again. Anything that you want to add, because this is our last meeting until we hit the road.
Thank you, Chair. There's nothing from my side. Thanks.
Carter?
Thank you, Chair. I just would like to know if we can get a breakdown of who is in which group, so that we know who's the colleagues going to be. Thank you.
Chair, yes, just I presume that at the beginning of every meeting, you as co-chairs will just give an introduction and determine the mandate at that meeting. That's probably, and that was all from my side. I think we have covered everything today. Thank you for, and thank you for the logistical arrangements. It's been a lot of hard work. Thank you.
I've got nothing. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, Chair, I think the legal process that we must satisfy ourselves on so that we do not fall into the trap of those that wish us to fall into a trap. The process is on what procedure you have to follow in terms of constitutional amendment, because I know that there has to be a constitutional amendment bill that gets gazetted and then introduced and then tabled for deliberations. And you know, as is parliamentary process, there has to be consultation on any piece of legislation that has to go through parliamentary process. So I got a sense that this grouping that says, why are we consulting the people without a constitutional amendment bill? With the hope that later on they will go to the constitutional court and say that we want to consult prior to tabling a constitutional amendment bill. So I don't think that we should fall into a trap where whatever activity that we're engaged in will be later on declared null and void in terms of compliance with the constitution. Perhaps you might need to check with the parliamentary process or the parliamentary legal office in terms of compliance with the constitution, because if ultimately this is going to culminate in amendment of Section 25 of the Constitution, we must follow the process thoroughly. But also we shouldn't fall into a trap that will then be compelled again to go and reconsult just for compliance purposes, whilst a sentiment would have been detected from the submissions of the oral submissions, the written submissions, and the community engagements that are going to be commencing now. I think that let us be certain, let us be watertight in terms of the legalities so that we do not fall into a trap that is going to delay this process through unnecessary legal challenges. I think that is one thing that as coaches you should perhaps more mandated to deal with, and then you advise us even through email so that we are sure that we are not falling outside of the constitutional boundaries.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. On behalf of the ANC, I think we want to commend the two chairs and the organizing committee. It's quite clear that this constitutional review process is on track. It's well organized, and I think that's the way to go. Secondly, I think all South Africans must utilize the process. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, so people should take part. They shouldn't stay away, they shouldn't boycott. It's everybody's process, so we think that everybody should take up the opportunity. Thank you, Chair.
I think this process that we are embarking on is really a process of determination of the desirability. And nothing, I think it's, we would be duty bound to then, once drafted, if the conclusion is that the amendment ultimately of the Constitution, that draft bill will be a public process, and everybody will still engage with that process. I think that's where, from where we're sitting, is that we're doing a determination for desirability. Even if there are upfront pronouncements that are made and perhaps resolutions taken in party conferences and wherever. But the process on its own is independent of whatever pronouncement made. There's no determination before the committee yet until the processes are all concluded. So desirability will then inform the next process after reporting to Parliament. I think that must be made quite clear, dear Chair. Thank you.
All right. No longer talking to members of Parliament, we're now talking to South Africans. We are ready to go. The groupings, Honorable Carter, you'd have them in your file there, who's Group A and who's Group B. I'll be reading 24, but I'm sure you've got the information there. If not, we can make it available. But we've tried to split the teams into two. Honorable Zimande will lead the inland group. I beg your pardon, the coastal group with half of the team. And so will be the inland group with half of the team. But if you want the names, we can make them available. I'm sure they are available readily available, we can make them available to Honorable Carter. We are starting on the 25th with Springbok, 26th with Springbok in the coastal group. We're starting in Limpopo with the inland group. And we are away from our families for 2 weeks. We are, as everybody else said, going to facilitate as MPs and allow South Africans to speak, requesting South Africans to raise their views. The public hearings will be run as any committee in Parliament is run, from the chair. There's need for intervention from whichever sector, we will ask for that intervention, but it's a normal committee meeting, so therefore we'd expect South Africans to allow dissenting voices from either side to raise their views. And where we see there's a need for intervention, we as co-chairs, all of us, will intervene in that regard. We will also try and make sure that where there are challenges like in Groblersdal, stroke, Marble Hall, we'll try and sort that one out to make sure that it's not the process that is challenged at the end of the day because people are not allowed to speak, but we will run those things as chair people. Also to indicate so that South Africans know, no written submissions will be allowed. Don't come with your truckload of written submissions to the venues. We're just simply not going to accept them. Those have come and gone. So your speaking notes to help us for minute-taking, we can accept, but there will be no written submissions. And there will be sufficient translation so that South Africans can speak freely in their mother tongue. And the rest of us that don't understand it will be assisted by translators. So people should be able to speak in their mother tongue. And we will, obviously, from the chair, allow sufficient time for speaking, but we will not allow any single individual to dominate the proceedings. We're simply not going to allow people to dominate the proceedings. More voices, the better, as far as that is concerned. We are hoping that, truly and Pat, that your awareness campaign is going smoothly. By the time we come to Jozini, as an example, people in Jozini must know that we're coming to Jozini. There must be communication via community radio stations, whatever. There must be sufficient awareness that we are going to Jozini and we'll be from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock at that venue. So I'm hoping that the advanced teams that are doing the mobilizations and the awareness are on the ground. Please make sure that that happens because it's important that those people know when we're coming and where we're coming to and the time frames of us coming there. And then finally, as honorable members have said, there will be work being done as we are in the field, but I think the general sentiment is if we can't identify the author, we are not going to consider it as a legitimate submission. So there might be in excess of 500,000, but if 400,000 have come from faceless sources, we will just disregard them. And the team Thuli and Pat, we hope, gets appointed as soon as possible. We're not interested in who they are. We're worried about the quantity of work that gets done because we're not getting involved in the supply chain management side of it. And then, of course, Thuli, maybe you must ask somebody from the legal just to indicate to us the points that Honorable Floyd has raised. Is it necessary for us to do anything so that the process is not sabotaged? Although my understanding is ours is just to ask the question, we are not going to change the constitution in terms of the wording. That's done by another committee. But just make sure that our process is not challengeable, so that when we submit our report, we don't have to answer the question of why did we do it? Was it a superfluous exercise and so on? I don't think it's a superfluous exercise. I think South Africans must speak, and as to what they've said can get processed somewhere else, but we're going to afford South Africans to speak. On that note, honorable members, if you've not received communique by Saturday from the travel agent about what's your flight number, where you're flying from, where you're flying to, please talk to Thuli and to Pat. And then we wish those that are going to the field good luck. Again, we are appealing that we facilitate and not be part of the debates and the discussions. We will reconvene, I think, sometime in August. Yes, we'll reconvene in August. We will get a comprehensive report of what has been given to us so far. Oh, the last question. We will, it is understandable that if members want to go and sit somewhere and look at the submissions, you can do that. Please make it available, or some arrangement if members want to go and scrutinize one or two of them. It should not be a problem. It's a big exercise, but it should not be a problem. On that note, Chair, can I hand over to you to close the meeting?
Honourable members, we thank you for your cooperation. You've made decisions. They're not the Chair's decisions. It's all you. You've adopted the program, you've accepted the venues, and you've expressed your views in terms of how the proceedings should take place. You are informed of the security, and you are informed of the set part, the lunch part. So, and we hope that courtesy will always prevail for the members of the public that would want to speak first. Perhaps who need to leave, who are sick and those kind of thing, disabled and all that. So, as always, South Africans are courteous, and we hope those soft parts of, but necessary things will be taken care of as well as we undertake the processes and the proceedings. So we thank you all. Thank you, parliamentary officials, and thanks to the media. And the meeting stays adjourned till over.
Sorry, Chair, before we do that, there was a big, I think, omission from our side. You know, yesterday we got sad news that one of our colleagues passed away tragically. Can we stand up for a moment of silence for the... Thank you very much. Meeting stands adjourned.